This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
Hour number two of the Diehards officially underway. It's Bobby Krivitsky, it's John Lyons, and it's Brian McDonald producing. We've had John Ryan on already, professional sports handicapper, telling you how to navigate this series between the Nuggets and the Heat in order to maximize your earnings. If you didn't hear it, go back and listen. Easy to download on everywhere you get your podcast from, plus the sportsmapradio.com website, and then you go over to the Diehards. You can get it there as well. But now we're going to talk more about the series itself, and John and I are going to give you our takes on it. And so I'm curious, John, when you look at the tail of the tape, Nuggets Heat, what jumps out to you?
The biggest thing to me is the high-end players on both teams and how well they're performing, but also the turnovers. Denver's number one in turnover rate this postseason, 11.7 per 100 possessions. But during the regular season, Miami was number three in the league in forcing them, turnover rate four. So I think if the Nuggets start turning the ball over, that's wide-open door for Miami to make this a long series and potentially win it. I think if the Nuggets don't, then things are heavily in their favor. And I mentioned the top guys are playing so well. I mean, you look at the Western Conference Finals, Jokic averaged 27, 14, and 11 for the series. Murray, 32, 6, and 5 for the series. I mean, those are great game numbers. These guys are averaging for the series. Jimmy Butler, I thought, against the Celtics, he had the 35 points in Game 1. After that, I didn't think he was dominant, but I thought he was really timely. Some of the threes he hit, especially in Game 7, just felt like daggers. Really impactful defensive plays. Caleb Martin averaged 19 points a game in the Eastern Conference. I mean, he could have been the MVP of that series. I think he should have been. But I think how well those top guys play stood out to me, especially on Denver's side. Like, their top players are playing elite basketball right now.
Yeah, and so what I look at is Miami spent the entire offseason and the regular season preparing for two teams, the Celtics and the Bucks, and even more so Boston, because that was who bounced them out of the playoffs last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. And it showed in how they went head-to-head. Now, if Giannis stays healthy and doesn't take the hard fall on his back and miss time and then come back and look different than the Giannis that we know, maybe Milwaukee advances and it's all for naught. But that's not how it played out. And here they are back in the NBA Finals, Miami. Second time in 3 years, I believe. Four years. Second time in 4 years. And what I look at, though, is that they feast and need teams who beat themselves.
Yeah.
And Denver doesn't do that. They're actually the best at avoiding that outside of Miami. And with Jokic, they consistently get a high-quality shot almost every time down the floor. So I just don't think the Nuggets, like the Celtics, like the Bucks, are going to feed into their demise and allow Milwaukee to overcome the gap in talent.
Yeah, and I think, look, Miami's got that finals experience, and they had a tough road. You could argue Denver had a tougher road. I mean, they had to beat Phoenix with Kevin Durant fully healthy. They swept the Lakers, but that's still a Lakers team that beat Memphis, got to the conference finals, had LeBron James and AD. They had just as tough a road as Miami did, maybe even tougher in some respects, considering how inconsistent Boston was. I know Boston was probably more talented than anyone Denver played, but they're just so inconsistent. And you're right, Denver doesn't beat themselves, so it makes me think, how is Miami going to find a way to beat them, especially with the lack of bigs that they have? I mean, Bam Adebayo, I know he's been an all-star and he's a good big, but beyond that, I mean, Aaron Gordon is so long. Jokic is a monster, right? They have guys across the board. Even Jamal Murray is thick and long for a guard. Like, they have guys across the board that are big, and that's something that Boston didn't take enough advantage of against Miami. I think Denver will.
The size is a great point, and two people you expect to feast off that, Nikola Jokic. Bam Adebayo is either about to put himself at the forefront of who should win Defensive Player of the Year next season, or validate what me and many others believe, and that is, as good as he is defensively, and he's a great two-way player, but as good as he is defensively, he's just not big enough in terms of bulk or height to really bother Jokic. And then if you double him to take away his scoring, he'll happily carve you up with his passing. So I think Miami's in huge trouble with the size. And the other guy besides Jokic, it's Michael Porter Jr., who's 6'10", who's got good leap on his shot and a high release. You're just not going to impact it, and especially not as a small team like Miami.
Yeah, and I think the Celtics had length to defend Jimmy Butler, but they didn't always have the will or the consistency. Denver has the length and the will. And I think that makes – and Eric Spoelstra, look, Mike Budenholzer won a championship. Eric Spoelstra, to me, is light years better of a coach than him. Joe Mazzulla was a rookie head coach who, we talked about it earlier, took over the week the season started. Eric Spoelstra was light years better than him. He's not going to be light years better than Mike Malone. He's going to be better. I would give Miami the edge in coaching, but it's not the gap that made the difference in those two other
series. It's two top five coaches.
Exactly. So I think that some of the Spoelstra wizardry that we've seen, especially in that Boston series, is not going. It's going to be there sometimes. It's not going to have the same impact to me. And I think now maybe we're going to see that Tyler Hero injury, that Victor Oladipo injury, really show up where we thought they might against Boston. Really shows up now against Denver, unless maybe Hero comes back. We'll see.
Well, so that's my next question for you. He was warming up at times before games against the Celtics. He's not going to play tonight, but would you bring him back at all? It seems like Miami really clicked and everyone found the right role for them without Hero.
I would. And look, if he, let's say he plays, just call it game three, first game back at home. He doesn't play well, they don't play well. You don't have to play him again. But I think to keep him in the holster and not use him would be a mistake. Because, yes, you beat Boston, but we just talked about how Boston beat themselves more than anything else. Yes, you beat Milwaukee, but we just talked about the Giannis injury is a massive part of that. I think if you're playing a team as good as Denver, you got to have everything possible out there. And like I said, if it doesn't work in game three or four, whatever, then you can pull it back and go back to what worked to get there. But I think he's too good a shooter and too good of a scorer to not get out there as soon as possible.
I agree, and you made the key point, and that is maybe they are better without him than with him, but at the same time, you can always adjust. If you bring him in for a game, it can be small minutes, and then, excuse me, he's got to earn them. If he doesn't play well, you don't have to bring him in the next game. You know, so you can see what you have and feel it out, but it's at least worth doing that. And then the next point that I want to bring up, another reason why I just think the Heat are screwed in this series, is that they have propped up their defense and hid not having good on-ball defenders by utilizing a trick that I know all too well, and that is they play, John, the Syracuse zone defense.
Yeah.
And the problem is that you really can't do that against Denver and Jokic, who will sit in the middle of the foul line, which is one of those death spots for the zone defense, and he will just pick them apart all day long.
Yeah. And his ability as a passer is something the Heat haven't seen, but in their defense, nobody in the NBA really sees that because he's the only big man that can pass that well. There's other big men that are good passers. Robert Williams on the Celtics, good pass, but he is by far the best. He's one of the best big man passers in NBA history.
Yep.
So that's something that, yeah, the Heat haven't dealt with that. Nobody really has. And I think that's a great point, though, that they can't just rely on the zone. And the Celtics got frustrated by the zone, but I also think maybe if the Celtics had better coaching, maybe it wouldn't have frustrated them as much. So I think, look, and there were times we saw in that series the Celtics were able to pick apart the zone at times. I think Denver can do it consistently, you're right. And I think then when you get in a man-on-man or a switching situation with Murray and with Jokic and with Gordon, like all of that, that gives a lot of teams problems. And I think it'll give Miami problems too. And I also think, I want to get your thoughts, I think the rest is going to factor in a little bit here. Denver with 10 days off. Now, if they win game one, which historically teams with a 5-plus day rest advantage are 8-1 at home in the NBA Finals game one, then they have 10 days of rest and they're up 1-0. You wonder if in games 3, 4, 5, that starts to catch up with Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is that they're going to the altitude right now.
Yep.
So that certainly helps in
Denver
terms of
8-0 at home in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that is one of the most significant home court advantages. So you wonder if that helps that Miami has to deal with the altitude as the Nuggets knock off the rust. How hard did Denver go? You know, they could take a few days off after the Western Conference Finals and then ramp it back up. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, right now they're up by double digits early in the second quarter, so they look pretty good to me. And I'm curious, John, I want to get your take as a football coach here, because that Miami zone defense and not really being able to utilize it, it's almost like a team that doesn't have a good passing attack but a really effective ground game until they run into an opponent where they know going in, we probably can't run the rock. How do you counter that schematically?
And I think that's where the versatility piece comes in. Like, the best teams are the most versatile teams. And obviously, look, the best teams make the most shots, duh. But the versatility, I think, comes in. And that's where I think a guy like Jimmy Butler, if the Heat win this series, he's going to have to be the true NBA Finals MVP, not the fake Conference Finals MVP because the voters gave it to him over Caleb Martin. He is going to have to be that guy that's going to probably defend multiple positions. He's going to have to come up with steals, much like he did in Game 2 against Boston and Game 1. I think he's going to be the key to it. And I think, and Bam Adebayo is too. I think, and look, it sounds obvious because that's their two best players, but Bam is their one true big, and Jimmy is their best, most tenacious on-ball defender consistently. And I think those guys, if you can't play zone, those guys are going to have an awesome series to me. Because, again, I don't think Miami has the versatility. I don't think they can play zone, switch, play man, and be good at all of them like some teams. So when you don't have that, then you're going to need your elite players to truly be elite all series.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that the zone is their calling card defensively. It's because these are not good individual defenders, by and large, outside of Jimmy and Bam. Even Lowry, you look at, he's just a shell of himself at this point.
Yeah, I would never trust Kyle Lowry defending someone. I mean, you put Lowry on Jamal Murray, like, that, you're getting cooked.
Yeah, and so you look at it, and it's Duncan Robinson and Struess and Vincent and even Martin. It's just, it spells trouble. They know they really can't go man because they'll be cooked, and the zone's not going to work. It's impossible for me to believe that unless something like an injury to a star on Denver, especially Jokic, occurs, that the Nuggets are not winning this championship. I think that their time has come. Steadiest team in the playoffs, best one here, and so many advantages, plus home court. I think this is the Nuggets championship to lose. I think they get it done 6 at the most. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes 5. Stick with us here on the Diehards because we have a surprise guest who's joining us next.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. This program is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Excuse me. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today and find out if we can save you hundreds on your car insurance. Excited to welcome on and congratulate. You've heard him on these airwaves many a time, including as a co-host. You can now catch him as a Boston Bruins reporter and writer for the Hockey News. He's also a broadcaster for ESPN Plus. Welcome on, Shukri Writes. Chu, great to have you on tonight.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thank you for having me on, man. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing fantastic, Chu. And so I want to start with the Stanley Cup. And my first question to you, you've got Bruce Cassidy on one side and the team that knocked him out on the other. Who are the Bruins rooting for in this series?
I mean, if I'm going to be perfectly blunt with you, I don't think the Bruins are rooting for either side. But if you're asking me, like, what, like, if there's a specific storyline that I am paying close attention to, I will tell you that the biggest storyline is going to be, can the Cinderella run for the Florida Panthers continue against this Vegas Golden Knights team that has played with an exceptional purpose throughout these playoffs. And I'm really excited to see, like, specifically Sergei Bobrovsky being able to contain his momentum that he's had for a little over a month and a half against Aiden Hill, in which that you can say that goaltending is probably like the only real weakness for this team. But it's going to be a really fantastic Stanley Cup Finals between the Panthers and the Golden Knights, and I'm really excited to see both Jack Eichel and Matthew Tkachuk take center stage on hockey's biggest stage.
Shukri, you mentioned Florida having a Cinderella run, and I think Florida, yeah, they were an 8 seed, but they were much better than your typical 8 seed. They won the President's Trophy last year. They traded for Tkachuk, and after they got down 3-1 to the Bruins, they only lost one game the rest of the playoffs. So I know it's a Cinderella run from a standing standpoint, but how close do you view these two teams just purely on the talent and the play of both?
I look at both teams, like, I wouldn't say that there's a significant gap between the two clubs. I think there is similarities between the two teams in terms of the blue line. I think the blue line edge goes to the Vegas Golden Knights, in which that they have some serious size in the blue line between Petrangelo, Brandon McNabb, and company. And I do think that that's going to play a really big factor for the Golden Knights in terms of the ability to block shots in the series. So in that regard, I do think that in terms of the forward group, I think that it's just about even, but there's a slight edge in terms of goal scoring that I would give the Florida Panthers to because they have 240 goal scorers, both in which have been huge in these playoffs in terms of Carter Verhaeghe and as well as Matthew Tkachuk as well. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see like how things like even out in terms of the goal scoring and as well as how both teams like to play their brand of hockey during these finals.
Shu, two of the things that you've mentioned so far, Sergei Bobrovsky in net, and then Vegas's defense, specifically being able to block shots. I'm curious, who or what are the X factors in this series, in your opinion?
As far as X factors, I would say for Florida Panthers, Brandon Montour has got to be huge in this series if the Panthers are going to win the Stanley Cup. And for the Vegas Golden Knights, I do think that Alex Petrangelo has got to make his mark in the series if the Golden Knights are going to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, both players are solid defensemen, and both players have been vital to both of their teams' Stanley Cup Finals run up to this point. So for me, easy, it's definitely Brandon Montour and Alex Petrangelo.
Shukri, Jack Eichel is leading the Golden Knights in playoff scoring with 18 points. Matthew Tkachuk is leading the Panthers with 21 points. That's not a big surprise. Those are the two best players on their respective teams. Who are you expecting more out of in this series?
In terms of the Panthers, I would say I'm expecting a bit more from Sam Bennett. I'm expecting Sam Bennett to really to kick off his offensive production a tick here during these finals. And for the Las Vegas Golden Knights, for me, I think the one player that really stands out in terms of who can I expect to ratchet his game up another level is William Karlsson. William Karlsson, in my opinion, I think he is the Golden Knights' most consistent goal scorer and most consistent offensive producer. So for him to step up huge during these finals, outside of what you just mentioned in terms of Jack Eichel for Vegas and Matthew Tkachuk for the Florida Panthers, I think no question in my mind that those are the guys that you definitely got to look out for.
Shu, it's prediction time, and I'm going to hold you to it. Who wins the Stanley Cup and in how many games?
I talked about this last night on a different platform. I do think the Panthers do win this series in six games. And I do think that Matthew Tkachuk does win the Conn Smythe Trophy for playoff MVP if the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup, and I think they will in six games.
Shukri, I want to switch gears to the NBA Finals. Game one is underway as we speak. Denver with an 11-point lead. When you look at Miami, they've had a really Cinderella-type run to get to the NBA Finals. Denver's been the number one seed. When you look at this series, do you think Miami has a chance to really hang with Denver here, or are they finally going to be overmatched?
I actually think that they're going to be overmatched only because offensively, I thought Miami throughout this postseason run has really played above their heads. And Denver has been the most consistent and the most complete team offensively in the NBA, both in the regular season and as well as the postseason. And you talk about the firepower that Denver has, obviously with Nikola Jokic, who won back-to-back MVPs. But you got to talk about Jamal Murray, who really has proved the naysayers and doubters that his NBA playoff bubble performance 2 years ago was no fluke. And that this guy has a knack for playing huge in big games in the postseason. And you also talk about Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon as well. I just think that Denver's offense is going to be a problem for Miami in which that it's not just one guy or two guys in which that they had to focus on like they did against the Boston Celtics. But I do think that Denver definitely poses a different challenge that Miami hasn't faced so far in these playoffs.
Shu, you rep the Boston Celtics. Many thought they would be here tonight hosting game one of the NBA Finals. They are not. It was a frustrating roller coaster of a ride. I think it's fair to say that this team underachieved based on its talent and potential. I want to give you some time here to just kind of vent and let us hear all your thoughts and your outlook on this year's Boston Celtics team.
It was an absolute failure. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I had the chance to listen to Brad Stevens' exit press conference with the media earlier today. And the thing that I ended up walking away from was the fact that this organization doesn't get it. They don't understand that you have to make changes. And I'm not talking about replacing Joe Mazzulla, no. Something has to change in terms of the DNA of this team in that locker room. But the fact that Wick Gorsuch had to go into the locker room and basically rip the team a new one in terms of asking them to play with some balls is pretty telling. And I think that speaks volumes to the difference between the Celtics locker room and the Miami Heat locker room. If you go back to last year, what Jimmy Butler said after Game 7, after losing to the Celtics 196 in Game 7, he said that we're going to be back in this situation and we're going to come back out on top. And he's embodied Heat culture. And when you look at the difference between a team that wants it and a team that just relies on talent, it's clear than night and day. And I just think that the Celtics right now, they have a lot of questions that they need to address. And I feel that if they don't change the DNA of the locker room, they are absolutely going to have a repeat performance of what they had in the Eastern Conference Finals again next year.
And Shukri, got about a minute left here. You mentioned changing the DNA of the locker room. Do you view that as a major trade, some additions to the coaching staff? Is there anything specific you really think is at the number one priority on the list?
I mean, addition to the coaching staff would be a plus, yes. But signing a player that's got that dog, that's got that nastiness, nastiness to a game, and I think that a guy like Pat Beverly could actually do the Celtics team wonders next season. I do think that this is something that the Celtics are lacking. Like, Marcus Smart is not that guy. If anything, I wonder about the DNA and the makeup of this team because of the way that Tatum and Brown carry themselves as if they have won something already, but they haven't accomplished anything as of yet. So I think this team needs definitely an attitude adjustment and to say, hey, like, you need to absolutely do something and accomplish something before you can walk around and celebrate as if you did something.
Shoes, well said right there. I want to give you the floor now. Go ahead and plug your social media handles. Let everyone know where they can find you there and where they can go to check out your work.
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me at Shukri Rice, at Shukri Rice on Twitter. Same thing on TikTok, on Instagram at S Rice Radio, and as well as the Believe Network, as well as we can check out the podcast as well. And in very short order, check out my work that will be coming up very soon for the hockey news as well.
Appreciate that, Chu. Stick with us here on the Diehards, a deep dive into the Stanley Cup, coming up next on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Bobby Gravitsky, it's John Lyons, and it's Brian McDonald producing. We talked a little bit just now with Shukri Wrights, who covers the Bruins and the NHL for the Hockey News. We're going to talk about the Stanley Cup ourselves now. And I'm curious, Shu, has the Florida Panthers, the team of destiny, lifting the cup in six games? What are your thoughts on this series, John Lyons?
So personally, I have Vegas in seven. So I think it's going to be a nail-biter of a series. And I mentioned this to Shukri. Florida's an eight seed, and they made it, and that's a great story. But Florida, much like the Miami Heat, but I think even more so than the Miami Heat, they are not a traditional eight seed. They won the President's Trophy last year, much like the Heat were the one seed. But unlike the Heat, they made a franchise-altering trade to get Matthew Tkachuk. And I know they stumbled out of the gates this year, but once they turned it on that second half of the year, they were awesome. And then they finally get in. By the way, one of only two teams this year to beat the Bruins multiple times in the regular season. They get down 3-1. Since then, they lost one playoff game. They won three in a row against Boston, beat Toronto in five, swept Carolina. Like, it's an amazing run, but it's not an eight seed. This is an elite team. Like, this team, win or lose this cup final, I think they're at least in the second round, if not the conference final, next year following it up. So I have Vegas, but I think this is going to be an absolute nail-biter.
They're good. It's a roster loaded with players entering their primes. And you brought up the second half of the season. You can even slice it down. When you're fighting for your playoff life for so long, sometimes a team can get to the postseason and that fatigue catches up with them and they ultimately get bounced. But other times, that locks you in, and you're playing at your best for so long, and you just sustain that. And it's clearly what the Panthers have done. So when you have the combination of the talent and then going from underachieving to being at your absolute apex for so long and sustaining it, this team just continues to roll. I think that the Knights are more talented, but that Bruce Cassidy style where you're trying to win with defense and you can see sometimes the offense just isn't there for this team on nights where they lose, I have more trust in the Florida Panthers, and I think it's less about the juju from the team of destiny angle and more just about this is a really good, well-rounded team that is locked in, and I think the Panthers are going to win this.
I think what ultimately is going to swing it for Vegas is the balance of their scoring. You mentioned that sometimes their offense can come and go, but they have six guys with at least 14 points in the playoffs. They have seven guys with at least 11. That level of balance, look, the one team that gave Florida trouble this postseason in Boston had really balanced scoring. They had a line with Pastrnak, a line with Marchand and Bergeron, who I know Bergeron missed part of that series hurt, but it's still an offensive line you have to at least account for. But then they had Pastrnak, Taylor Hall played really well. So I think the balance of the Bruins gave Florida some trouble before the Bruins ultimately choked. I think the balance of Vegas is going to give Florida some trouble. But I do think Florida, their edge and toughness is going to give Vegas some trouble, too. Dallas did not have that edge. And Jamie Benn's dirty play notwithstanding, they didn't consistently play with that competitive fire and edge. Florida's going to have that night in, night out. So that's where I think the series is really going to go back and forth. I just think the offensive balance of Vegas, little bit of an edge there.
Maybe so, and it's a great point. I look at something even as simple and as silly as this might sound, but Jonathan Marchessault had two hat tricks. It wasn't like either game. They get three goals from one player who they don't heavily rely on for goals. He certainly had some timely ones in his career. But both of those games were close. It would be like a third liner on the Bruins having a hat trick, and they have to squeak it out. I think one of those with the Knights went to overtime even. So to me, I just worry about the consistency. Yes, it's dynamic, and it's a well-rounded group. But is it potent enough against this opponent that is red hot right now? That would be my concern for Vegas.
And I think the goaltending situation is really interesting because Vegas, Adin Hill came in during game three of the second round due to an injury, 2.07 goals against average, 937 save percentage since he came in. They've won seven games. Florida inserts Bobrovsky in game four against the Bruins, mainly because Alex Lyon had played bad. He's 11-2 since then, 2.21 goals against, 935 save percentage. So both guys got inserted during the playoffs, in pressure situations, and both have played great. The difference is this is the guy Bobrovsky's always supposed to have been. Like, this was the guy Bobrovsky was in 2019 when the Blue Jackets upset the Lightning. Whereas Hill, newer guy on the block, at least for this level of success. So that's the one, for me, the question I worry about with Vegas is both goaltenders have come in tough spots and played really well, but I do have more faith in Bobrovsky to keep that going.
Yeah, I think it's a totally fair point there. I agree with that. And then, you know, we talked about Chu. With Chu, I asked him his X factors in the series. I think a player to point to is Chandler Stephenson. He matters so much to Las Vegas' success. He's undersized, but he's physical. He's good with the puck. He scores timely goals. He had an overtime winner against Dallas. I think he is a compass, if you will, for their success.
Yeah, and I think the experience factor is really interesting because neither of these teams has a lot of postseason success and experience, but Vegas was in the Cup just a few years ago. They have two guys on their roster, and Alec Martinez and Jonathan Quick, that have won a Cup. Bruce Cassidy was in the Cup a few years ago. Whereas Florida, Paul Maurice was coached in the Stanley Cup, but that was in 2002. So it's 21 years ago. Eric Staal won a Cup. It was in 2006. It was a long time ago, but he's done it. Neither of these teams has a lot of experience, and very few guys have won a Cup. Neither franchise has. But I wonder if Vegas is a little bit of edge there, at least having a chunk of guys that played in one 5 years ago, coach in one, too. A couple guys have won. I wonder if that gives them some sort of edge in a pivotal game five or in a game seven or something like that later on.
How much confidence do you take if you're Vegas from the fact that outside of the top points leaders in the playoffs that are on the Panthers, the Knights went through all of them. You know, most notably Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. How much confidence do you think that gives them?
I think it gives them confidence, but I don't think it gives them any more confidence than Florida beating Boston, who had the most regular season wins ever, and a Toronto team that had won their first playoff series but had a really good roster, and a Carolina team that was a higher seed than them. So, and by the way, a Carolina team that just a few years ago was also in the conference final in 2019. So, yeah, I think it gives Vegas some confidence, but if I were Florida, I might even have more considering what they went through and how dominant they've been. And I know, look, two overtime winners against Carolina, the game four winner with 4.9 seconds to go. They were close games, but they did win them. So I honestly think Florida would have more confidence going in, but I think Vegas would still have a lot.
Can I tell you something? I totally took the cheese on the Maple Leafs. I've never believed in them. I thought this was because they changed their identity at the deadline and brought in so many tough-minded and physical players, Ryan O'Reilly most notably.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this is a different and well-balanced operation that is built to win. They get through the Lightning. I totally took the cheese.
And I did, too. And I took the cheese once Boston lost. I thought the Bruins would have beat the Leafs.
Yep.
But as soon as Florida beat Boston, I said, oh, the Leafs are going to win. And I thought it would be tough. But I thought the Leafs are going to win this in six games. Six tough, tight games, but they're going to win it. Florida walks in and punches them in the mouth in game one. They really dominate them the whole series. They win in five. So I took the cheese on the Leafs as soon as Florida won. Credit to Florida, though. I mean, and I do wonder, now the Leafs have moved on from their GM. That's a whole other topic. But it's like, that's a franchise that, like, they finally win a playoff round, and then they come out and gag it in the second round. It was really disappointing to see.
Yeah, I just think they are who they are. And at this point, fair or not, and I think it is, but I'll never buy into them sight unseen.
No, I have to see them win a championship before I even believe it. I honestly have to see them to believe it. One thing, too, that I think is really interesting about this cup final, I want to get your take on, it's an all-Southern cup final. So we have Vegas in the desert. We have Florida, two teams that have never won it before. Could this be a good thing for the NHL in the long term?
I think it's a great thing, and I think the NHL understands that it needs to lean into parity, and it needs to make it so that it's appealing to watch no matter who's playing. Will give you a storyline and a reason to be compelled by it. It can't be, and it's interesting because Gary Bettman, way back when, worked under David Stern in the NBA before leaving to go to the NHL, but I don't think they can have the model of, we market the stars, that's how we cover the league and want the media to handle it, and it's only, hey, these two, three, four teams matter, and everyone else, we're going to act like they don't exist, and it's a bad thing if they're successful. It can't be the model, it hasn't been, and so to have more parity is a plus for the NHL.
And I think you look at, you mentioned the NBA model, whereas the NFL model, they have big markets, but winning has dictated the coverage and the stars. I mean, New England, before they won their first Super Bowl, they had been a laughingstock. They had gone 40 years of franchise history, never won a Super Bowl. Brady and Belichick come in. They're the biggest story in sports. They fade. The Chiefs, who had had success 50 years ago, all of a sudden they win two Super Bowls. They're a massive story. So I think if the NHL, maybe they're leaning more towards that and they're fine with that. My issue here is viewership's going to be down because it's too warm.
The Stanley Cup is not going to get good ratings, period.
Right. However, long term, I think it's good as long as it doesn't happen every single year. Like, you still have to have those traditional cold weather markets.
But I also think
I think having these teams' success is a good thing long term.
Definitely. But I think you could have the Bruins and whoever, and the ratings overall would not be that good. They'd be great in Boston, but the NHL just is what it is. And yeah, they have the football model working for them, and maybe they'll grow the fan base. And certainly if this is a good series, it'll help.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and John Lyons.
Closing time indeed here on the Diehards. Bobby Gravitsky and John Lyons. We got Brian McDonald producing the NBA Finals Series opener, Game 1 at the half. Right now, it is the Denver Nuggets on top, or excuse me, third quarter already underway here. Either way, the Nuggets in control. They lead by 15, outplaying Miami through just over 24 minutes. John, I mean, this is what we talked about, where it just seems like they've got no answers defensively.
Yeah, we even mentioned this off air, and the more I watch this, the more I think Denver's going to win this in five games, and three of the wins are going to be like double digit. They cruise to a victory, and that's look. Miami's had an awesome season. Would I be shocked if Miami made this a deep series based on what I've seen? No, but Denver is so big, so dominant, scores so well, and Jokic is such a unique animal. I just don't see Miami being that competitive and not nearly competitive enough to win this series.
Ready for this? Caleb Martin, no points, 0-5, hasn't taken a three, and is a minus 9.
Yeah, as a Celtics fan, that makes me want to just punch myself in the face, Bobby. Because and we knew this was going to happen. Not just him, but the Heat were going to play out of their minds. And remember, even there was the reports, I think after game two or game three, that Celtics players were, quote, stunned how well the Heat were playing. Like, you knew they were going to get to this NBA Finals, and whoever they played, they were going to come right back down to earth. And not suck, but also not be this elite, amazing machine that they were against Boston.
They're not playing an opponent that's going to beat themselves, and that's a huge problem for Miami because they're not as good as Denver. And they've got two starters right now, the Heat, scoreless. I mentioned Martin. Max Strus is 0-7, has not made any of the six threes he's hoisted, and he's a minus 9, just like Caleb Martin. And then you look at the Denver side of it, and we talked about going into it and just now about the defense, and what you have is the Nuggets balanced scoring, four starters in double digits. Gordon has 14 points. Jamal Murray has 18, and Jokic has 10 assists already.
Yeah.
So I just think that this series, I just can't imagine Miami winning without an injury to one of the stars on Denver.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you mentioned it and you hit the nail on the head. Denver is not going to beat themselves. And when you have a team that talented that also doesn't beat themselves, it's tough for anybody to beat. But I wonder if Miami, we mentioned the talent gap against Miami. We mentioned the talent gap against Boston. This is maybe where it finally catches up to them.
Yeah, I think this is where it's a team that has overachieved because they have a culture, they have the best coach in the league, and everyone is optimized. But that still only takes you so far.
Yeah.
And in a best of seven, when it's not any given Sunday, and when you're built around a zone defense that masks that you really can't play man, and then you go up against a team that will annihilate your zone defense, you don't have a counterpunch in you. You talked about earlier the need to have that balance and be able to spin the dial. The Heat can't do it, so they're in trouble, and I would expect them to lose.
Yeah, and you mentioned like the culture of the Heat, and I'm not taking anything away from that. I think it's legit. Denver has a really good culture too. Like, they have a long-tenured head coach. You mentioned a top-five coach in the NBA, Jokic and Murray, and what they've grown and built together. So Miami has great culture, but so does Denver, and they have the great talent. Like, I think that's really, like, Miami had the better culture than the Celtics, and that ended up overtaking the Celtics' better talent. That's not going to happen with Denver because they're just as talented as Boston, but they don't beat themselves, and they have that extra culture piece.
This is a hodgepodge segment anyways. We're going to cover a lot here, so I'm just going to pivot for a second. As we talk about this series and really have low expectations for it, thank God we were just talking about the Stanley Cup in the last segment. I mean, you predicted it goes seven games. Like, it's just going to be so much more compelling. Thank God at least one of these projects to be enticing.
Yeah, the best thing for the NHL is if this is over in four or five games, because then the Stanley Cup, if it goes seven, they end up, A, getting a bunch of viewers, but it's a really good showcase for their sport in general. But you're right. I mean, this is, I've always felt June is the second best sports month of the year behind October. But part of that is, you know, you do need both series to be good, you know, competitive. So, and I think Denver's in an interesting spot because let's just say Miami pulls off the upset, which we don't expect, and wins. They're still a team that went to the NBA Finals with a bunch of guys in their prime. And if they win it, they're a champion with a bunch of guys in their prime. Like, Denver is not a team that is on the last legs of vets or that is kind of seeing what they have or they have worries about contracts. Like, they have a lot of guys in their mid to late 20s signed for multiple years. They're going to be a force for you. Them and Phoenix are going to be a force for at least the next two or three years.
Yeah,
Denver probably longer.
Jokic is in the best shape of his life.
He's 28.
Keep in mind that a couple seasons ago at the deadline, they got Aaron Gordon as what they thought was a piece to put them over the top, and it might have been, but Jamal Murray blew out his knee. Yeah. And then Michael Porter Jr. got hurt, and they spent 2 years where they just weren't healthy enough to compete. And now they are again, and it's great to see that they didn't miss their window, and they're in the finals, steadiest team in the postseason and the regular season, and probably about to capture the Larry O'Brien Trophy. So it's great to see this Nuggets team get rewarded because they've taken the right step at every turn.
Yeah, they've had patience, and they've built with it. And like I said, now we're looking at Jokic is 28, Aaron Gordon's 27, Jamal Murray's 26. Like, this is, you know, and look, health is a big part of it, but this could be the start of a run where in the next 5 years they make three NBA finals, win two championships, right? Like, this could be the start of something like that, again, because of the talent level, the culture, but the age and guys signed for multiple years. Like, not many teams that win a championship can check all of those boxes.
And then we have another NBA matter to get to. Before game one of the finals, Adam Silver said of Ja Morant, quote, "We've uncovered a fair amount of additional information. We probably could have brought it to a head now, but we've made the decision. It would be unfair to these players and these teams to announce that decision in the middle of this series." That comes from Tim McMahon of ESPN. Very concerning news regarding Ja Morant's future.
Yeah, and I think it's something that, you know, he made the mistake originally, was away from the team for, I think it was 8 games. Then he does it again. And the thing to me that's really disturbing is you can say that, and I feel this is true, in the Instagram Live video, he didn't commit any crimes. Didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he held up a gun in a video. Not a crime. However, when you've been suspended and you've had a conversation with the commissioner and made promises, then it's unacceptable. And then it's just stupidity, too. It's like, what are you doing? And now he's not only jeopardizing his own NBA future, because, look, I'm not saying he's going to get kicked out of the league, but a long suspension is going to hurt his production. It could end up hurting his contract and, in the long term, hurting his career. It's also a massive black mark for the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that was the 2 seed this year, has been a 1-2 seed type team over the last couple of years. But now, if you're without this guy for half the year, most of the year, even when he comes back, they're going to be so far behind the eight ball, it's going to, I think, derail their entire season.
On the heels of that the second video coming out, Adam Silver, in an interview, sounded like a disappointed parent, that he thought they had an understanding, that him and Ja Morant were on the same page, and again, he sounded more disappointed than mad about what had unfolded there the second time. Now, the NBA has also deserved some blame because they allowed him, you know, the gif of Abe Simpson where he walks in the door and walks right back out.
Yeah.
That was Ja Morant going to rehab. They let him come right back out. You couldn't possibly sufficiently address all the issues that he needs to really meet with people and get help on that quickly. So the NBA did not help Ja Morant. The Grizzlies didn't help Ja Morant by allowing him to go in and out of rehab and back on the court so quickly. But also the other side of it is that a lot of people around the league felt like Adam Silver took it light on Morant the first time. And these comments make it clear that's not going to be what happens
now. And I think the thing that frustrated people around the league is when he held up the gun in the first video, it was on an NBA road trip. That language is very clear in the CBA. Like, you cannot be on an NBA travel or road trip and have weapons. Like, that is unambiguous. The players negotiated that. They were in the midst of other CBA negotiations at the time. Like, I think that's what frustrated a lot. And then, and Silver, by the way, is someone that, in other instances, has been pretty harsh with his punishments. Goes so easy here on a marquee player. I think it frustrated people, and I think you're 100% right. Now we're going to see him very similar to Roger Goodell, going easier on the Patriots on Spygate and then going over the top on Deflategate. I think we're going to see, maybe not over the top, but I think we're going to see a really harsh punishment here.
Buy or sell a suspension of half the season?
Buy. Yeah, I think it's going to be half, maybe even a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that Ja Morant is about to miss a lot.
Which is, I mean, the Western Conference, it's a pretty, I mean, Denver is Denver, Phoenix is Phoenix. Beyond that, a lot of open space to be a good team and to be a contender. And like I said before, this is going to derail Memphis' chance, I think, of doing that.
If you want to make a bet on the San Antonio Spurs and Victor Wembanyama getting to the playoffs, this might help the cause.
Yeah, Zion, too, in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah. If he can stay healthy, I really like that Pelicans team.
Yeah, and Sacramento with a actual playoff experience under their belt now. I mean, again, it's so wide open that, like, if you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan, you got to be just absolutely disgusted with this situation.
Yeah, you've got to wonder of what could be and what might never happen for this Grizzlies
team. What might never happen is the really scary part.
For our producer, Brian McDonald, and John Lyons, I'm Bobby Krivitsky. Thank you so much for listening to the Diehards. We'll be back on these airwaves, Sports Map Radio Network, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the rest of your week.